Hey guys, I am so excited to talk with Diana today. Diana is just freaking awesome. We've known each other for a couple of years now. We first shot a wedding together back in the fall of 2021, and that is where we met. And she is just so awesome and just like so genuine and has like the biggest heart. And so Diana, who is also in Arkansas with me, so she's a close, like she is in the same area as me. She describes herself as an emotive Arkansas wedding and elopement photographer obsessed with capturing the candid in between and authentic moments of your story, which I just freaking love. And as someone who's known her for a couple of years and has spent lots of time with her, can just say that's absolutely true and authentic for who she is. She just has the best heart. She's so kind and wonderful. And I cannot wait to introduce y'all to her on the podcast today. And we're going to talk a lot about imposter syndrome, and it's just going to be a blast. So let's go. All right. Okay. So we're just going to talk about imposter syndrome today. So we're going to talk to my friend Diana, and she's a wedding photographer in Arkansas as well. And so to start, Diana, let's just like introduce you and tell us about your photography background. So like when, and I know this, but when did you first like fall in love with photography? Like when was it like a thing that you just like started to adore?
Okay. Well, hello. Like she said, I'm Diana, and I am a photographer based in Arkansas, specializing in weddings. And let's see here. When did I first fall in love with photography? I probably would say middle school. I was introduced to technology lab. And so through technology lab, I was able to work cameras and things like that. And so I just became very intrigued with, how it worked and, the kind of images that I wanted to produce and how to go about producing them. And it's always just been a lifelong hobby of mine that I decided to spin off professionally here about 6 years ago.
That's awesome. So like when you got into it back then, like what kind of were you shooting when you first got interested in it?
For me, honestly, it was a lot of pets, a lot of animals. I was really interested in wildlife, butterflies. So it was wildlife. It was nature. And I think that reflects currently in my work too. I know. Yeah. I've gotten distracted several times by a butterfly at a wedding, fluttering through, the bouquet. So I feel like there's still part of that in me.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what got me intrigued. It's like, ooh, how can I best capture, this moment of, whether it was a bunny on the trail or, like I said, a butterfly flying through the air. And honestly, it's kind of challenging actually to shoot some of the wildlife. So
well, even like when you're talking about, I'm like, okay, a butterfly in a bouquet, like of course you want to photograph that, and then immediately my head's like that you have to shoot that so fast.
Yes.
Like if there's a butterfly in a bouquet, you have to like get it so freaking fast. Like you can't just
they don't hang around, they don't pose for you.
they don't want to pose. They just want to fly.
They want to flutter.
I love that. So when you were like, and I know this, so I'm trying to think already what we've talked about because I'm like, know your story in my head. But tell us about your first experience photographing a wedding, because I love that story.
Oh my gosh. When was, oh yes, yes. My father. Oh
yes,
my gosh.
I love it.
Okay. So we're starting with that one. Okay. So, as I mentioned, I've always been known to have a camera in hand from middle school on. I minored in art studio at the university. It's just always been something that my family has always, equated with me. It's like, oh, Diana's around, she'll take some photos. Not even a second thought. So this was, I was probably a junior or sophomore in college. And my father was getting married. He had been civilly married, but he wanted to have a religious marriage with his wife of, I think at that point, 20 years.
Yeah.
So it was going to be super special. They live in Arizona. And so of course, I was there. And I remember showing up, flew out to Phoenix And my father asking me the day of the wedding, morning of the wedding, my dad asking me, hey, did you bring your camera? And I said, yeah, of course, I always bring my camera. And he said, oh, right, great. Well, you're the one taking the photos today. And I'm like, wait, what? What? And we're not talking like a little elopement. This is maybe like 100 people there. My dad does not know a stranger. So, of course, he had, you know, a full Catholic wedding. It was on film. I was only shooting film.
How many rolls did you have?
I tend to overshoot. I've always overshot even in film. So I would, for a trip like that, I would always bring, you know, like a six pack or something like that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I definitely went through all of my film.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Day one, of course. But you know, it's one of those things that had I known I was going to do this, I probably would have gone into my head. I probably would have had a massive case of imposter syndrome because quite literally never done this before.
Yeah.
I'm glad that I got to experience that. I'm glad that, you know, I have that memory to share now with other fellow photographers. And I'm sure it's like cringy, like, oh, you don't know you were shooting a wedding today.
I love it. It's like just like you jumped into it. Like you're just like, okay, I'll do this.
Yeah, but you know, I would say probably about a year ago, I visited my dad, and I think I shared this story previously with you. I visited my dad, and my husband was with me, and I said, you know what? I want to know how bad these were. Like now that I have been a professional photographer and that people pay me really good money to do what I do, how bad were these? So I asked my stepmom, I'm like, hey, stepmom, do you still have the wedding album? Because again, film, had it processed and actual, you know, print.
Yeah.
And I put together an album for her. And I said, hey, do you still have it? Like, of course I still have my wedding photos. I love them. And she brought them out. And to my complete shock, they weren't absolutely terrible.
Yeah. I love it.
And also made me realize how instinctual some of those photographs were. I still take very similar shots. I still compose very similarly. Of course, I have, you know, now years of experience in that. Let's see, when was that? 2007, maybe?
Yeah.
So we're almost close to, 20 years of experience later?
Yeah.
Of course, you know, the technology has improved, my composition has improved, and all of those things. But the essence of the style of photography that I take, which had been photojournalism, which had been, you know, very much human connection and really seeking out those moments and anticipating those moments, that has always been within me and what I pride in my work today.
I like freaking love that, because that's something I've noticed about my own work too, is like there's shots I took like when I first started and like I knew what I wanted, but I didn't know exactly how to get it. And so then once you figure that part out, it's almost like looking at a before and after photo in some ways.
Yes,
what I mean? Because you're like, absolutely. Oh, like I can see it. And it has that essence like you're talking about, but maybe like the skill level isn't there yet. And so you still have that like striving for emotion, but you haven't yet figured out how to do it. And then you can like look at them as like, okay, this is before I figured out how to do it. And this is after. I love it. That's so fun. I love that you could see that in yours too. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I love it.
The best.
Awesome. Okay. So you left an awesome career for photography. You had like a great, great career.
Most people don't see it coming. So I'm a first generation American. My family came here really, you know, drilling onto us the importance of, you know, education. And of course, they always, you know, hyped up being a doctor or being an attorney or being an engineer or like really having access to education that they didn't. So for us, I'm in a family where my brother's a biochemical engineer. My sister's, you know, studying to be a psychologist. I think she's on her master's right now. And so I actually studied food science. And prior to that, I was med school bound. And so for me, it was, you know, it was a really fun career, food science. I worked for major world corporations and enjoyed it. But, you know, it's just something about working for someone else, something about my time not being my own and not always being creatively fulfilled. There was a part of me that, you know, wanted more. And so my husband's support really just encouraged me to pursue photography. At first, it was both while I was a food scientist and doing this. And, you know, pandemic really forced me to shift how I thought about how I wanted to spend the rest of my life, as I'm sure it did for a lot of people.
Oh, yeah.
And I decided to go for it. And here we are.
I love that. Like, okay. So like, I know like it was in the pandemic and I know we've talked about this, like just amongst ourselves, but like, what did that kind of feel like to leave, I don't want to say like a set career path. Like I don't, but, you know, but you know what I mean? Like where you're yes. like, you have like more of a plan because it's really hard to plan.
Structure, more structure.
Yes. It's like sometimes I talk with my husband even now and I've been self-employed like my whole adult life. But like sometimes I'm like, man, like it must be nice to just like get a paycheck and like know when you're getting a paycheck. Do you know what I mean? Like, yes. So what was that? Because I've only really experienced it from the like self, I almost said self-inflicted.
Yeah. Self-perspective, from your perspective.
Yes. From like your from that perspective. So what was that like to like step into more of like an unknown?
Scary.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely scary. But for me, with having that perspective, right? For me, last year, so I haven't been fully self-employed for very long. It will be in March, it'll be a year.
Yeah.
But for me, it was honestly just everything that was going on in my life. And I know that working for a corporation and having, you know, that paycheck every week and making a really good living.
Yeah.
Sure. You know, we had more flexibility for, you know, taking vacations and, you know, saving for different investments. But having a conversation with my husband of what it was doing to me, you know, emotionally and how it affected our relationship and what we wanted to be, you know, the goal for me and it, prioritizing, right? The goal for me wasn't to make the absolute maximum amount of dollars in my lifetime.
Yes.
And having that allowed me the courage to say, okay, this corporate career is not fulfilling my primary goal, which is to live a fulfilled life, to be happy, to be a good wife, to be a good friend, you know, working 60 plus hour weeks and, you know, going above and beyond, also, you know, working an extra, you know, 20 hours or more on my small business. It really wasn't allowing me to be the best version of myself. And I had to make that decision of like, okay, put your money where your mouth is. What is most important? What is it that you want to look back at your life and feel and, you know, experience? And for me, it wasn't, those dollars were not enough to keep me, you know, from what I really valued most, which is time with the people that I love.
Okay. I love that so much because I feel like ever since the pandemic, there's been this like, and maybe it's just like the media I see, but there's been like such a like drive of like the six figure type rhetoric. Do you know what I mean?
Hustle,
like,
hustle culture. Yeah. Six figure business or multi six figures. So absolutely. And I think that that's, you know, obviously we need money. We need money to pay the bills. We need money to buy our gear. We need, you know, money is the tool. My husband is great because he's a numbers guy. Mm-hmm. And he's just been such an encourager of, you know, me looking at the perspective. So we need a number, right? What is it going to take to keep a roof over your house, over your head. What is it going to take to feed you? What is it going to take for you to, you know, save for the future? All right, there's your number. Anything extra, do you have to really think about what you're giving up in exchange?
Yeah.
And is it worth it to you?
Yeah.
And for some people, it might. You know, maybe some people aspire to retire in Monaco and own a yacht. Well, then you probably do need multiple six-figure businesses to do that.
Every year.
Yes, yes. But for me, for my lifestyle, for what I seek, that's not what I need.
I love that. Like, I love that perspective because it's just like, I agree. Like, I'm with you 100%. Like, I, you know, like, with all my kids and like all this stuff, like, of course, like you want to have money, but like you want to be there and like, you know, you want to have, you know, I love how you called it a tool because you want it, like you need to take care of yourself and your loved ones. You know what I mean? But there's so much more about taking care of yourself and your loved ones than just financially. Like there's so much that right. we all need for our families. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I love that you mentioned your kids too, because, you know, what me and my husband have been setting up for ourselves and for our life is at some point we would love to have children. We would love to have a family and expand our family. Currently, it just consists of two dogs, but
great. They're giving you a run for it. They give you a run for that money.
I know they do. But, you know, in order for us to do that, you know, he works a very demanding career. He's an engineer and he loves, you know, what he does, but he's usually working 60 plus hour weeks. And so for both of us to be grinding that hard, we wouldn't be in a position to be there for our kid. We would have had to, you know, hire a nanny and hire a house cleaner. And, you know, that's really not the life that we want for ourselves or for our future families. And I know I would love to be around to take my kids to school, to pick them up, to help them with their homework. Yeah. And that's just something that would not be feasible working the type of careers that we had. And, you know, there's, you know, gives and takes. But for us, it's about what can we do to set, you know, what we want our life to look like up to become a reality.
Yeah. No, I love it. Okay. So, okay. I love all of it. It's so good. But okay. So when did you feel, I know like, again, like this is a little bit of backtracking, but I really want to talk about the imposter syndrome. So like when did like, when you stepped away from your career, do you feel like the imposter syndrome was something that you had already dealt with before stepping out of the career and into photography? Or do you think that it was something that like impacted you more as you became like a more like full-time photographer?
I would say the latter. So for me, I felt that I was prepared and I felt empowered due to my degree and my education. To step into the role as a food scientist. I stepped into my role in corporate America, probably a little overconfident.
Okay. You're like, I've
but,
got it.
You know, I also, you know, I'm very proud to say that, you know, I had a job lined out even before I graduated.
That's amazing.
Thank you. And, you know, I felt very confident in that role. And like I was saying, I didn't really have an experience with imposter syndrome until I branched out and became an entrepreneur. Until I branched out and, you know, in the world of being a photographer, because in this area that we live in, there's lots of really talented photographers. And for the most part, most of them are younger than I am. So here I am in my 30s, maybe you would say, you know, a safe career, a very structured, you know, science career to do something on the creative space. And so, you know, feeling like a fish out of water of, I didn't have a community really. I really didn't know a lot of people that were in the industry. At that point, I haven't even like niched down to figure out, okay, what is it in photography that I like? And so for me, was just all of it at once, right? Am I good enough? Oh, I don't look like anybody here. Or, you know, I'm not shooting with the gear that everybody else is shooting with. And, you know, there in the beginning, I even wondered, hey, is this what I should I even pursue this? Because I just feel like I don't belong here.
Well, you do belong, obviously, and your work's so good. And I think that it's just like, I mean, I think that so many of us like just like struggle with those feelings of just being like, am I like, what am I even doing? Enough? Yes. Like, am I good enough? What am I even doing? And like, when you're doing the business by yourself, it's kind of like, no, one thing that like, okay, that like I've noticed over the years I've been involved in photography is kind of when you start. So like when you're starting, that's before, if you're starting photography, that's before you take that career leap, right? And so like people will be like, oh, this is so good. This is great. Like, you're such a good photographer. But then like, you don't get that feedback as much anymore the longer you shoot. Of course you do from your clients. Like, you know, of course you don't hear back from every client, but of course your photographer, your photography clients will be like, oh, like these are great. We love them, which is so fantastic. And you know, you're doing the right stuff and you have happy clients, but you're not getting that necessarily that feedback from like your friends. Yes. Like it changes because like, well, yeah, like you're a professional photographer. Of course, you know, you're a good photographer. And I think that can kind of be like a mind bender a little bit when you go from like getting feedback from friends and family and then like not having it as much, but you're shooting so much more and probably creating so much more work that you're more proud of than you were creating when you were getting a lot of that positive feedback from your inner circle.
Absolutely. I think that the big thing too is like being able to quantify it, right? It's hard to quantify, you know, are you doing a good job? There isn't, you know, an end of year eval that all your clients submit to you. There, you know, there isn't,
check
you know,
number scale.
Right. There, you know, there isn't this industry scorecard that gets sent to you in the mail. You know, you don't have this structured, you know, pay raise that tells you, okay, you're mediocre or you're knocking it out of the park. It's that introspective, right? It's also very subjective. And I think that that's why in creative industries, not just photography, imposter syndrome can be just such a huge barrier and such a like huge mental roadblock, especially for female entrepreneurs. And you know, that's just backed by studies. I think I sent you, you know, just kind of some tidbits, but 75% of executive women in a study that was published by Forbes, 75% of executive women feel imposter syndrome, deal with imposter syndrome, are affected by imposter syndrome. So, you know, we women especially really need to take, you know, note that we're not alone and that there's actionable steps that can help us to overcome this so that, you know, we can be successful.
Yes, I love that. Okay. And I love because like you're so organized and on top of things and I love it so much. And I love the list you sent me. So like, let's dive into it a little bit more. So like, what actionable, I can talk, steps can you take to like overcome imposter syndrome, do you think? Like, so I love that you're coming at this too, because like sometimes I feel like, okay, this is imposter syndrome just talking. Like sometimes because I've only had experience really working for myself, I've never had like a normal 9-to-5. Like you're like, okay, well, what is like actually like the right way to do things from like a more corporate background, because I don't have that background. So I think it's so fascinating to like talk about this with you because you have that more structured background. So you know what it's like to go from like that structure to working for yourself, where you still have to have a structure, but it's not as like innate necessarily. As rigid.
Well, I've got, brace yourself, I've got seven actionable steps for you.
I love it.
You can always, you know, break some of these down, but we can just talk about this and I'll do my best to give you examples, some of which include you. All right. So I would say first off is acknowledging, you know, your achievements, you know, big or small, really taking the time to be like, okay, you know, these are things that I have, you know, accomplished. You know, maybe I booked my very first event or I booked X amount of events or, you know, whatever that is. I think that we really need to take the moment to, you know, acknowledge that and, you know, be proud of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that can be so hard to just like, I know I struggle with like, if I hit that goal, I'm like, okay, well, I wanted to book 10 of these. And then I'm like, well, why didn't I book 15?
We're never satisfied. But I get it. But yeah, no, just taking a moment to reflect on your journey as a photographer and remembering, you know, like when you, those times that you've really nailed it, especially when you're starting out, right?
Yeah.
Like really like, oh man, this session, you know, flowed really well, you know, really connected with, you know, my family or my couple, whatever it is that your niche is. And just taking a moment to just say, wow, you know, like I, you know, really, you know, succeeded in this today, this technique, or, you know, it could be in your client interactions. Yeah. It can be keeping track on your to-dos for the day. I know sometimes that's a struggle bus.
And it's always a struggle for me. I'm like, such high hopes.
And then I would say the second actionable step is to identifying, like you were just mentioning, identifying that negative self-talk.
Yes. Yeah.
Like you booked 15 events. Why didn't I book 20? Well, come on now.
The goal was 10.
You know, even if, you know, you're just, you know, kidding and you're like, oh man, I suck, or I'm the worst, or yeah. You know, we tend to say things like that, and mm-hmm. You know, you speak it onto the world, and the words have power. You know, words can really like hold and can really hurt and can also really lift up. And so
yeah,
if we're like not talking to ourselves with kindness, if we don't have that self-compassion, you know, it's going to be much harder for us to thrive and to overcome these feelings.
Yeah, no, I think that's so true. And like, I think that like sometimes like, cause that's something I struggle with is negative self-talk. And like, so sometimes when I'm being really mean to myself, I have to be like, okay, would I ever like say this to like one of my friends?
Mm-hmm. Or would you want somebody to, you know, would you want Poppy, your daughter, to speak about herself that way?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like you have to like take yourself, like when you get in that negative, like self-talk, you have to kind of like separate yourself from the person you're negatively talking about, which is yourself. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
The third, this is what you're part of and what has made probably the biggest difference in overcoming, you know, imposter syndrome is having support. So seeking support, seeking a community, seeking to surround yourself with people that, you know, are like-minded, not necessarily, you know, in the same industry, but like-minded, mm-hmm. that uplift you, that encourage you, that, you know, feed into, you know, what you're trying to do and accomplish. And, you know, don't be afraid to seek out support. I know I started with just, you know, Instagramming people and just DMing, sliding into DMs of various people. That's actually like kind of how I met you. I slid into the DMs of a local photographer and, you know, and stalked her for a while. And you know, she's one of my best friends now. And she introduced us. And I would like to think that you're one of my best friends now too. So
yes, I love it. No, that's like, and that's what's so great about it is like, okay, it can be hard to make friends in any creative industry. Like, I think it's just really hard, even because of schedules, right? And like, but like, once you start making friends, like, it's so wonderful because you can build those other friendships from like something mm-hmm. as simple as sliding into a DM. And you might get a lot of no's, you know what I mean? Or people, because sometimes people don't even see the messages. There's definitely been times where I've had someone slide into mine and I didn't see it for like weeks because I'm really bad about checking my messages. And I have to do my emails. Like I have to do emails.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
And so like, I love that.
So how have you, I guess we can offer some examples for the people listening, folks listening, about seeking support. Like I said, one of the examples is just sending DMs on Instagram. I've also joined a couple of groups here in the area. Mm-hmm. There's a group here called Hustle and Hills. I've gone to a couple of their events.
Okay, yeah.
There's also organizations for small business and startups. Mm-hmm. What other suggestions do you have for people that want to take that support?
I think that mine's a little bit different because I love all the organizations. I love like sliding into the DMs. I think all of that makes so much sense. I think what's really important to me and is like a way that I've really been able to cultivate friendships like ours is like once you meet someone, I think that like it's really easy to like get into your own head when you're meeting with other photographers. And this could be with any creative industry, but like when you're meeting with somebody who is a like, okay, who is a competitor in a lot of ways, right? Because like we both shoot weddings in Northwest Arkansas, right? And so like theoretically on the surface level, that would just make us like competitors. And it can make you feel very guarded sometimes when you meet a new photographer. And I think that like for me personally, it has been having to, with all of my photographer friendships and creative friendships, is really separate the two things of like, I want my photographer friends to be successful and I want to be supportive of them. And I also want to be successful myself. Of course I do. You know what I mean? And I think that sometimes photographers and creatives of all kinds can kind of self-sabotage those relationships by like letting some of that competitiveness seep into the friendship. And so for me, it's just really important when I am cultivating a friendship is to be able to like separate those as much as I can. And just because of course, sometimes like, I mean, I've had photographer friends where like, I really wanted a wedding and they booked the wedding instead. You know what I mean? And like, things like that, where you have actually lost business to photographer friends. And I think that we can let that kind of sour the friendships. So for me, I like to really separate them the most that I can and be like, okay, like, yes, I wanted this wedding, but like, I'm so happy for my friend that she got this awesome opportunity that's going to fit her so well too. Does that make sense? And like, really being open to having like those long coffee dates and really just like getting to know the person and not just getting to know the Instagram personality. Does that make sense?
Yep. Definitely does. Yeah. All right. So seeking support. The next one is setting realistic goals. I think that it's really easy to start thinking that you're not good enough. It's really easy to doubt yourself and the things that you're doing in and on the business if you're not setting the proper goals. I believe in an A, B, and C goal. Okay, and so for me, I set, you know, I look at what my last year was. I look at like, okay, what would I want to do next year based on that? So, you know, maybe one of your goals is to double your amount of, you know, family sessions or weddings or whatever it may be. And then looking at the data to make sure that that fits. If you know that year over year, you're increasing 15, 12% or whatever it may be, setting a realistic, you know, goal wouldn't mean that, you know, maybe you stretch it an additional 5 or an additional 10. But if you, you know, add 300% and say, I want to make $1 million this year, you're setting yourself up for, you know, some disappointment. So
what?
I'm not saying you can't do it. You are super capable of doing it. If anybody can do it, you can. You go, girl, and then you can give me some notes. Tell me how you did it.
Well, if I ever make that million, I'm going to write it down for you and we'll break it down together.
Please.
We can both make it. That's 2 million.
But yeah, I think it also helps to be married to a numbers guy. And so like, he's really helped me, you know, narrow down my realistic goals. Like for example, today I was looking at, you know, kind of where I was. I'm in the middle of busy season. And of course, you know, like it's the first of the month. So the first of the month, I like to look at, you know, my last previous month's financials and how that, you know, keeps me to track. And honestly, today I realized I am most definitely, unless something wild happens in December, I am going to miss my A goal for 2023. Like I'm going to miss it.
Yeah.
And so instead of like, oh, I suck, or, oh, you know, like just getting in my head and start with the negative, you know, self-talk, I'm like, okay, well, what are those variables that happen? Right. Why is it that maybe I receive less inquiries? So what's going on? And well, for me and most wedding photographers, you're being booked 8 months to 12 months out.
Yeah.
Typically. Well, last year was a hot mess for me. I didn't spend a lot of time advertising. I didn't spend a lot of time connecting with, you know, people in the industry. I really didn't do a lot of things that would enable me to have more visibility to the people that, you know, were planning weddings and getting ready and to propose or whatnot. And so looking at what that realistic goal for me is next year is, you know, hey, these are some things that I experienced this month and for 2023. These are the variables that affected it. All right, let's set up a game plan and what that realistic expectation for business growth next year. And that will help me also mitigate that imposter syndrome by having data and having knowledge and having, you know, that empower me to make better decisions that are based on actual facts and numbers, not just feelings of unworthiness.
Yeah. Well, because it's so easy to like just slip into that. But like, I think that looking at it from that perspective just really shifts it because, and especially because with something like bookings, like we do have some control over it, like talking about the advertising, but we don't have the total control. Like we don't book ourselves.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But we do have, you know, there are levers we can pull and there are things that we can do. And at the end of the day, like you said, we don't set ourselves up. So we're not in the industry where if we're available all the time, we're not booked all the time.
Yeah.
We need clients. Right. So,
yeah.
But anywho, I hope that cleared up the setting up realistic expectation. That was number four.
I love it.
All right. Number five was setting up a success journal. I don't know if people journal anymore. I know I do. I have
I love like a journal. 4 different journals
of different things. Mm-hmm. I have implemented a virtual way to do this, having a success journal. And okay. So, again, this is totally my husband's idea.
Uh-huh.
It came about when I was experiencing imposter syndrome pretty heavily in the beginning. Uh-huh. Is something that stuck. So I created a folder. It lives on my desktop and uh-huh. I titled it gratitude. So on days where, you know, I'm not feeling my best or on days that, you know, I'm like, am I doing the right things? I have set up this folder to copy emails or sometimes text messages from clients or people that I've worked with. And it just allows me to have, you know, that quantifiable, if you will, or at least for our purposes of like the work that we're doing and how it matters and how it does make an impact. And it's great. I really like it. So thanks to my husband, Bobby, for that idea.
Bobby is just the smartest. I love it. I love that. I've never thought about doing something like that because I just love it.
Yeah. All right. Number six, continuous learning. So I think that's the other thing too. We talked about how, you know, we've seen our improvement from like 15, 20 years or whatnot.
Yeah.
And I think adopting that mindset of, oh, look, I was so bad. I sucked. Oh my gosh. I can't believe I did that. If we shift that perspective to, oh my gosh, look how much I've grown. Look how much I have learned. Look at the skill sets that I have sharpened over the last 6 months, 6 years, you know, whatever it may be. And knowing that we know less today than we're going to know in 10 years. Just like, you know, we didn't know as much as we did 10 years ago. And so adopting that continuous learning, continuous growth mindset also helps that, you know, relieve some of that imposter syndrome because we are all a work in progress and we are all hopefully continuing to work on ourselves and through experience and through just, you know, developing relationships with others, we become, you know, better and more efficient and more, you know, secure in what we're doing every day.
Yeah. I love it. I think that's, I think that's something that can be really easy to forget about.
So I guess the last one would be very similar to the first, with like acknowledging your success. And the seventh is celebrating that success. So acknowledging, saying, hey, yeah, I did this good thing, and also celebrating it by, you know, maybe for me, my A goal was if I met my A goal, I was going to buy myself this particular piece of equipment. Well, I'm not going to need that, but I also have a B goal and I have a C goal. So I have ways to celebrate those goals already lined out. And so having something to look forward to, I know we recently did it like what a week ago or a few days ago. And I said, hey, when we get through this business season, let's reward each other with a lunch. Let's go have lunch.
Oh, because it's just like, let's just go out and like do nothing that like, a lunch date.
Absolutely. And so celebrating, that would be the seventh and final actionable step.
Yes, I love it. I think all of those are like so helpful with just dealing with imposter syndrome and just really like moving forward. Because I think that it's one of those things that like once you, it can be really hard, easy to fall down the rabbit hole and very hard to pull yourself out of the rabbit hole, no matter like what stage you're in with photography.
All right. Well, do you want to just go through them and like just recap them real quick?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Okay. So number one, acknowledge your achievements. Number two, identify negative self-talk. Number three, seek support. Number four, set realistic goals. Number five, keep a successful journal, a success journal. Six, embrace continuous learning. And seven, celebrate the heck out of your wins.
Yes, I love it. I think that's so awesome. Well, I am so glad that you got to come on here today. It's really exciting. You're my first guest besides Andrew, and it's going to be so good. So yeah, thank you so much for being here. Where can people find you? Like on Instagram, anything like that you want to share?
Absolutely. Yeah. So on Instagram, you can find me at Joy and Light Photography. On Facebook, you can find me as Joy and Light. And my website is joyandlightphotography.com. So thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Awesome. I loved it. Well, guys, I had so much fun recording that with Diana. She is just like a little ray of light, and I just had so much fun chatting with her about imposter syndrome and about ways you can overcome it. She is phenomenal, and I just hope that if you are dealing with imposter syndrome in any way that you can really like glean some awesome information from this episode. And yeah, it's been so fun. And as always, my name is Lissa Chandler, and I'm a photographer mom, and I'll be back next week where we are going to talk about style. And I am so excited about it because that's like my favorite subject always. I love talking about style. Okay, I'll talk to y'all next week. Bye, guys.